The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Everybody, and welcome back to Canceled Too Soon, the podcast where we review television series that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
And my name is Whitney Seibold. I too am a critic, and Dinah Wow.
Critically acclaimed cool. Yeah, it doesn't really work.
Not really.
No, not everything deserves to be a prefix.
And wouldn't you know it, we're scraping up against Sid and Marty Croft.
Oh, Sid and Marty.
We've been threatening to do Lidsville for the longest time, but A, Lidsville is bizonkers, and B, there's a lot of it. Like, it lasted one season.
How much Lidsville
is there? It lasted one season, but I think there's like over 50. I'd have to look it up. There's
Why
a lot
would
of
you
episodes.
Do that, Sid and Marty?
Lidsville is the kookiest. Lidsville is a movie about, I think it's Butch Patrick, gets into a gigantic magician's hat and is sucked into an alternate dimension where people are hats. And the villain is Charles Nelson Reilly.
I've heard stories that if you go into Seth Rogen's production offices, you could just smell the weed. I heard this, I don't know how true this is, but I heard they moved production offices and they had to extra scrub the place because everything just smelled so much of weed. And I feel like, I don't know what acid smells like, but I figure if you were, when Sid and Marty Croft left their office, they was everyone's why do I taste plaid? did we wash the acid away with Sid and Marty?
Did everything taste purple for a second?
Yeah.
Sid and Marty Croft are award-winning TV champions, and they've done a lot of really notable shows.
H.R. Puffin stuff. Sigmund the Sea Monster, I think, was theirs.
Land of the Lost was the show of theirs that I watched the most when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Probably the most fondly remembered today, I think.
Yeah, they did a lot of these genre shows, a lot of which were very puppet-oriented or gigantic. The Bugaloos was another one. They did Superbug.
A lot of people in sort of giant mascot outfits.
Yeah, that was their métier for the longest time. It's what they're best known for. They were involved in other things as well, but their shows were very, very strange. They didn't have a tone like any of the other shows. There were a couple of Sid and Marty Croft knockoffs. If you ever remember a show called The Great Space Coaster,
no.
That was a Sid and Marty Croft knockoff. It wasn't actually theirs.
I feel like a lot of Ruby Spears live action stuff.
Yeah.
Had that vibe, like the Ghostbusters. Not the real Ghostbusters, but their Ghostbusters has a very Sid and Marty Croft kind of vibe. Very formula driven, very broad humor.
The guy in a gorilla suit.
Yeah.
Electra Woman and Dinah Girl was unusual in the canon in that it wasn't necessarily a comedy. Now, Land of the Lost wasn't a comedy either. That was an adventure show about Rick, Will, and Holly. They get in they go river rafting and they go through an aperture in space time on their river rafting trip.
Did you see the show Lost? It's like that, but for kids in the 70s.
But they end up in dinosaur times and they run into proto humans and befriend them. But there's also lizard aliens that are bothering them that
all
live
the,
in the ancient past.
All of the coolest theories about Lost, when it first came out, there's gonna be dinosaurs on the island, stuff like that. No, you're thinking of Land of the Lost, which is an awesome show. I actually kind of like the movie, even the Will Ferrell one's actually kind of fun.
Oh, I never saw the movie,
it's
actually.
It's fun. There's a lot of fun stuff in it, I actually like that.
But, when you go to stuff like The Bugaloos and H.R. Puffin stuff and Lidsville, those were sitcoms. Sigmund and the Sea Monster.
They were kids' shows. They were shows about little kids going on adventures with monstery friendly things, and everyone learned a valuable lesson, and that's not this. This particular show that we're reviewing on Canceled Too Soon is chosen by our patrons over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork, is a superhero show, very much modeled after the 1960s Batman television series. And it is, as Whitney has already mentioned, and he didn't pause long enough for me to put a clip, Electra Woman and Dyna Girl. See, that's how you do it.
Well, you know, I just want to get to the meat of the thing.
I know. I just need to play with the clip.
Excuse me. Electra Woman and Dyna Girl, fighting off evil deeds. Awesome, funkified theme song.
Yep.
This was long after Batman.
About 10 years after Batman, yeah.
But it's Batman.
It's the Batman formula.
It's really similar to the 1966 show Batman.
You have an adult superhero. You have a teenage sidekick. In reality, the woman who plays Dyna Girl is only about 2 years younger than the woman who plays Electra Woman. Electra Woman is played by Deirdre Hall. Dyna Girl is played by Judy Strangis. And yeah, there's only like 2 years different. They're both women. But the whole thing is they are secretly... When they're not reporters, and they almost every episode begins with them like investigating a scoop, but then a bad guy does something, and then the reporter thing is forgotten for the rest of the episode. They're superheroes. They have a mad scientist living in their basement who's constantly inventing new things for them to use to fight crime, and every week a new wild supervillain modeled after the old Batman sort of kooky, everyone's got a gimmick type of bad guy. Shows up, and in a two-parter, but each two-parter is only half an hour long total, 15 minutes. They fight them. There's a cliffhanger. Cliffhanger is resolved. They fight them. And, much like Robin would always say something like, holy rusted metal, Batman, Dyna Girl always says something like, Electra, wow! Or...
Dyna Wow.
Oh, she says Electra.
Oh, no, she says Electra.
Yeah, she says Electra. Electra, wow. She's not... so egotistical as to use her own prefix.
Fair.
She respects Electra.
Their superpowers come from something called electrocoms, which are little widgets they wear on their wrists.
Basically, it's like an iWatch.
And they use, quote, computer technology, the same way 50s monster movies used radiation as an excuse to facilitate any kind of supernatural whatevers they need.
So sometimes their electrocoms are good for, say, a tracking device or talking to someone on the phone or looking at a video. Other times they can be used to, like, make duplicates of inanimate objects or make people invisible or fly. And it's basically just whatever we decided they can do this week.
They also have a Batmobile. They have the Electromobile.
Electric car, actually.
Electric car.
Which is a convertible, and it is more of a concept car. It looks kind of like, I don't know, like a shield or something. Like, it's got a conical kind of front, but a wide back. Yeah, doesn't look like a very practical mode of transportation.
No, and there aren't a lot of scenes of them driving around in it, like in the old Batman show.
It's just an excuse to give them their own kind of Batmobile.
If you think the old Batman show looks campy and cheap, good God, you have not seen Electra Woman and Dyna Girl. Electra Woman and Dyna Girl was made on like such a paltry shoestring. Mm-hmm. It looks so unbelievably cheap. The special effects are just unilaterally awful.
And we're not even talking like the usual video toaster effect where like, oh, you can only see someone's arm because the rest of them is invisible.
It's like behind a blue screen.
Yeah, that's super obvious. I'm talking about... There's a bit, it's a shot they use in almost every episode, of Electra Woman and Dyna Girl. They go into their house, and they press a secret button, and then they go into an elevator that takes them down into their lair. And when they're in their lair, all of a sudden, they have their costumes on, just like Batman and Robin and their poles. The elevator down to their lair, when you see it from the outside, is clearly like a cardboard or like plywood red sort of box, like long, long box. And at the bottom, the door opens, Electra Woman and Dyna Girl are there. It's clearly not a working elevator. It's clearly just they open the door and the actors just run out. But in order to make it look like an elevator, they shine a rectangular light from the top of the box to the bottom as though there's a window. There isn't. It's clearly a flashlight. And the weirdest fucking thing is, it kind of works. They almost get away with it. It's actually not the worst gimmick you could use.
Electra Woman and Dyna Girl kind of drifted into my consciousness because I'm like sort of on the waning edge of Generation X, Generation Y, I suppose. And this one was vaunted. A lot of the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff was held really high in sort of like Gen X entertainment. A lot of these things were recycled from, it's like enjoying your parents' generation stuff, but also kind of scoffing at it at the same time.
Well, this is from an era where like the repeats from your parents' generation were still very much on when you were watching TV. Mm-hmm. So like when we were kids, at like early afternoon or like first thing in the morning or midday on a weekend, you would see the 1960s Batman, or you would see Electro Woman and Dinah Girl.
All the Sid and Marty Krofft
That's
shows.
Not so much a thing anymore because we're not limited to whatever is available on TV.
Now it's just on whatever streaming service.
So if you don't want to see something old, you won't. But previously it was, well, this is the only thing that seems like interesting for my generation right now, so I'll watch the 1960s Batman as if it just came out today.
Yeah, I don't know how well this was received at the time. It was...
it was canceled after 16 episodes. It ran from September 11th, 1976, through September 2nd, 1977.
And that was under what they call an umbrella show, and this was a lot more common with kids' entertainment back in the time. Especially with Hanna-Barbera and with Sid and Marty Krofft.
The Krofft Super Show is what it was called.
It was actually one program that ran other programs inside of it. And, you know, we've been debating on Canceled Too Soon whether or not the Umbrella Show should count as the show or the segments in it should count as the show. This is technically a segment from within a larger show.
But it was. But the larger show was basically like its own little mini network or block of programming. So yeah, I think it counts.
It counts.
It's one of those like kinda type situations. But I think for all intents and purposes, the show, other shows on the Krofft Super Show continued. There was only two in the initial season that got canceled after a season. The other one was a show called Dr. Shrinker, which I'm less familiar with.
Yeah, I don't know Dr. Shrinker, but it was a guy with a shrink ray.
I guess they shrink three people down to 6 inches tall, and then it's about the shrinkies trying to return to normal size while the mad scientist and his assistant Hugo, played by Billy Barty.
Billy Barty was in a lot of the Sid Marty Krofft stuff.
Yeah.
He played the Moth in The Bugaloos.
Okay.
And I don't think he was Sigmund, but he was one of the sea monsters.
Okay.
Maybe he was Sigmund.
I don't know.
But yeah.
But in any case, so Electro Woman Dinah Girl, it also aired by just to get the officials out of the way, it aired on ABC. Okay. That's what the Krofft Super Show was on.
But I was going to how this was a kids' program. Wasn't really well received at the time, but it found second life as sort of like stoner programming.
Right. Well, it's also, there weren't a lot of superhero shows starring women. And although I would hesitate
there was Wonder Woman at the time.
Well, there was Wonder Woman at the time, but it's still not nearly as many as there were men. Because like you look at like on TV, like, and look at kids programming. You had Gigantor, you had the Herculoids, which had one female character. But, you know, you had Thundar, you had Space Ghost, you had all of these male superheroes running around, and there were a few female superheroes at the time. Spider-Woman had a show. We did that on Canceled Too Soon. But there were fewer, and so they stood out more. And I think it's one of the reasons why this show has, you know, a bit more legs in terms of its sort of cultural footprint, is because this was supposed to be an empowering show for young women. And I think that's certainly a noble endeavor. Formula-wise, it's Batman, but without the writing staff being genuinely funny. Yeah. So it's basically just the trappings of Batman, and you either find that charming or you don't at that point.
Well, and there's not a lot of in the way of comedy in the show.
No.
There's like a few comedy like sidekick characters here and there, but
Well, you're just supposed to find the whole concept kind of charming. And you get the sense that every single actor, like the villains get to ham it up a little bit. They're having a good time. I got the distinct impression that Deirdre Hall is bored as hell.
She's just sort of
there,
just reading the lines.
She's got no personality. Like her character is, I'm sure the actress is fine, but the character has no personality other than being stalwart. At the very least, like Judy Strange just gets to play this like kind of hyperactive, super invested, ultra optimistic character. And there's one episode, a piece, where each of them gets to play the bad guy for a little while. There's a scene.
Only then does it look like they're having fun.
Judy Strangest
in the Sid Haig episode. Yeah,
Deidre Hall, it's less fun for Deidre Hall because she still has to, like, in the Deidre Hall episode, the villain is impersonating Electro Woman, so she still has to, like, play Electro Woman. The episode where Dinah Girl turns evil, it actually is Dinah Girl turning evil. She's having the time of her life, and I'm saying it right now, she's the best villain on the show.
She really is.
She's fun.
She's fun, and she actually gets this, like, the conceit of that two-part episode is they've constructed a widget,
that reverses evil, your personality.
An evil genie has stolen a Russian scientist's technology to create a widget that will reverse your personality, and they fire it at Dinah Girl, and she becomes a super villain. So she gets they give her like evil eye makeup and paint her really pale and give her lipstick, and she starts saying things like, "I like being evil." And she's having a good time, and for a little bit, so are we.
Yeah, Electro and Dinah Girl is much like when we reviewed the Ghostbusters TV show, or I guess late last year. It's formula. It's so much formula. Yeah, the episodes bleed together really fast. So in addition to reviewing the original series, we're also going to be talking about the two attempts to reboot it. Afterwards, just because those are actually kind of more interesting shows.
In a lot of ways.
But let's real fast, because there's not a lot to say about each of them. Let's just walk through the main episodes.
They each have a villain of the week, so we can go by the
And
villains.
Some of them return. So the first one is called The Sorcerer's Golden Trick. This features character actor Michael Constantine, who is probably best known to modern generations as the dad from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. He's an Emmy Award winner. He's been a major character actor for like since the 60s.
Yeah.
Just very reliable, always brings a lot of charm to everything he does. And he plays like a stage magician who has his own sidekick, his own
Dazzle.
That's her name. And in the first episode, he has a magic mirror. He's going to rob Fort Knox with a magic mirror, and he's going to make all of the gold disappear. And the big twist is, aha, he did it all with mirrors. The gold was never gone. And I'm like, then what the fuck was the point of that? The point is to steal the gold, not to impress everybody with your magic. You could have done that without being a criminal.
I think he stole half of it. Like, he wanted to be like, he stole part. I forgot what it was. But
it doesn't make a lot of sense at all. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Look, nothing about this show makes sense.
No, not especially, no.
And it's kind of bizarre because Electro Woman and Dinah Girl are technology-based heroes.
Yeah, they don't have superpowers.
Yeah.
Not inherently, anyway.
Yeah, everything comes through their electrocoms and through the widgets that are invented for them in the week. There's typically a Q scene as well where their Q invents their weapon for them and demonstrates how it works, and then they use it later in the episode. That is Q from James Bond.
Yeah.
But it all rolls very, without any kind of comment, into all of these super villains who have, like, legit supernatural powers. Like, this isn't like Scooby-Doo, where it turns out, like, there's no supernatural element to Scooby-Doo.
There's quite a few of them are actually supernatural, yeah.
These are, like, actual supernatural villains, and they're using technology to beat them.
Yeah. Weird. So that the first episode, they beat the sorcerer. Well, anyway, moving on. What do you remember about the sorcerer's golden trick?
He uses mirrors to steal gold in Fort Knox.
That's the plot. We're done. There's really very little. The next episode, this one's actually kind of fun for a couple of reasons. The next two-parter is called Glitter Rock.
And that's also the name of the villain.
The villain is named Glitter Rock. He has like a big green afro wig. And he's like a trippy, hippie musician who's going to like hypnotize the world with his music, and he's going to hypnotize the world after he makes himself the ruler of a country by stealing the ring of a visiting king, played by guest star Michael Blodgett. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wow, Michael Blodgett! And you should be thinking, wow, Michael Blodgett, even though you probably don't know who that is. Michael Blodgett was in Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which is a hell of a resume in and of itself. He could have stopped right there. Mm. He was also in Catalina Caper, which is, of course, a classic from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Classic, and you can't see the quotation marks.
Yeah. He also co-wrote Turner and Hooch. Yeah.
Mm. I haven't seen Turner and Hooch.
That movie was a license to print money. That was just Tom Hanks in like the Big era, so he was like really just money-making comedy star. He's a cop. He teams up with a dog who eats his stuff. Comedy gold.
I hate movies where cops team up with dogs.
The scene...
That's a whole genre.
The scene where the dog eats Tom Hanks's car is just... And it's purely Tom Hanks's performance. Comedy gold. It's just Tom Hanks makes that movie work. I don't know how. It's not a good premise. But he made it work. He also co-wrote a very, very good thriller that I wish more people had seen. I wish it was more readily available. Called Run. Starring Patrick Dempsey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's actually pretty cool. Patrick Dempsey plays a guy who's delivering a car across country. He's driving the car across country to deliver it. And he stops in, like, Atlantic City or Reno or something. And he just decides to gamble. And he ends up winning a game of cards for a ton of money. And a guy tries to start a fight. And right in front of everybody, Patrick Dempsey accidentally kills him. Mm. And it turns out that's the mafioso who runs this town's son. So now... everyone in town wants to murder him. It's quite fun, actually. That's a good movie. Mm. He also wrote a very bad Chuck Norris movie. I know, stop the presses. But it's a serial killer film called The Terror, in which Chuck Norris is trying to stop a bad guy who... what's the name of that? Is it the Wiltern that's on Normandy? In, like, Koreatown in Los Angeles?
The Wiltern. Oh, no.
It's the Wiltern.
Wilshire and Western. It's called the Wiltern.
Yeah, there's a very famous venue here in Los Angeles called the Wiltern. And, like, the serial killer, like, lives in the attic above the Wiltern. And it's really fucking stupid. It's a bad movie. It's a really bad movie, actually. But anyway, Michael Blodgett, I think he had a fascinating career, and I want to give him a shout-out. Because he was in some weird shit, and then he wrote some hit movies. Good for him. In any case, yeah, so there's this big trippy guy and he tries to stop the world and
he tries to hypnotize people with his glam rock.
Yeah.
And he's got star-shaped sunglasses and the big green hair, and he'll show up in one of the remakes.
The next two-parter is actually one of the few ones that tries to have a twist. It's called Empress of Evil. And this is one where there's actually a supernatural villain and she's trying to take over the world, and she has her own sort of, she's got her own peanut gallery. Like, she doesn't actually do anything. She's got, like, her sidekick, Lucretia. Mm. And Lucretia is basically saying, hey, you're doing great, buddy! Like, that's kind of all she does. She's just a booster. And Electro Woman Dino Girl have to defeat her, and she, like, makes the floor lava. Oh, no, the floor is lava. It's a good thing we have our wrist thingies. Mm. And then at the end of it, it turns out the Empress of Evil was an android and Lucretia was the real villain all along. An android who does magic. Moving on. Next one, and here we're just like, we know of literature, but we didn't bother to read any. The next two-parter is called Alibaba.
I feel like there was a time when a lot of stock historical figures, and I blame Jay Ward for this, like Rocky and Bullwinkle, or specifically Peabody and Sherman, who are bringing characters like Alibaba and Cleopatra, who also shows up on this show, were showing up in a very specific form, like this comedic version of themselves that we'd see in cartoons all the time.
Interesting. Well, in that case, this one stars as Alibaba, Malachi Throne, who had previously appeared in Batman, the live-action series, as a character named False Face.
I was about to say, kind of. He didn't really appear because he wore a mask. He had a false face.
He would also show up, and I forgot to mention this when we reviewed, we do a podcast on our Patreon called Holy Batman with a W. In which we're reviewing every single episode of the 1960s Batman. I forgot to mention when we talked about the Malachi Throne episode that he would eventually go on to also co-star in a really interesting episode of Batman the Animated Series, where you know how like Two-Face has a split personality? In that one, it's split again, and he had another alter ego called The Judge.
Oh, wow, okay.
So he played the Judge. So that's actually really interesting. And the genie, this actual supernatural genie who can grant wishes, which makes you wonder why he needs to commit crime. Don't ask that question. The show doesn't have an answer. But the genie is played by Sid Haig.
Long-working cult actor Sid Haig.
Yeah.
Who's also on Batman.
Also on Batman. Sid Haig, you probably know him best from Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. Mm. But he's also been in some of the best grindhouse movies ever. If you haven't seen Spider Baby, see Spider Baby.
Spider Baby is like one of the better cult movies out there.
If I were to make a list of like the top 100 greatest cult movies of all time, I think Spider Baby would be in the top 10. For sure. It's really great. So yeah,
he worked in every TV show. Yeah. He's very striking looking. You recognize it, Hank.
Great character actor. Anyway, so in this one, Ali Baba gets his genie to help him kidnap a scientist who has found a pill that reverses people's personality, which begs the question, why don't you just get the genie to do that? And the answer to that question is, meh. I don't know. And then this is the one where Dinah Girl turns evil, and she's hilarious. she is grinning like a maniac. She's going, like she's been unleashed.
You can tell they're bored. Yeah. You can tell how all the act, like everyone's even the so bored already. Even the villains don't get that chance to really chew it up.
Not often, no. Like they don't have anything to do. Like they have they're the just sitting there in a throne room describing the plot. That's mostly what they do.
Sometimes they have a colorful outfit, but yeah, they don't look like they're having fun.
No, it's really sad.
Not Burgess Meredith was having fun.
Yeah, because Burgess Meredith had stuff to do. Yeah,
Frank Gorshin was having fun.
He had stuff to do. He could throw pies at people and seducing people and like blowing up banks. Like he was like. He had things to accomplish, but these shows are so cheap, the villains are just hanging out in their lairs. The next two-parter is called The Return of the Sorcerer. In this one, the sorcerer returns.
It's got the mirror again.
Yeah.
And he actually tries to force Electra Woman into another dimension.
Oh, yeah, it was weird.
And she falls into, like, this weird nether space for a little bit.
I kind of like this one bit in this one where the sorcerer, like, leaves them a note. That says, wasn't this a great trick I just pulled? Surely you'd want to give me a big hand. And once they say big hand, giant pair of hands starts clapping on the screen, like trying to like clap them to death.
And it's just superimposed. But yeah.
It's kind of trippy, though. Like if I was high, I would have been like, yeah. Like it just sort of like, that's weird. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got, really. It's the only noteworthy thing about the episode.
Sid and Marty Croft, actually, this is a Ruby Spears joint. Like, they're the creators of the show, but this was under the auspices of Sid and Marty Croft.
Yeah.
Sid and Marty Croft claim they didn't do acid. They claim they didn't do drugs.
You can claim a lot of things.
They claim that drugs had nothing to do with these shows. These were, like, just their attempt at being legit entertaining.
Yeah. Again, you can claim a lot of things. You knock yourself out. Whatever you fucking say.
I remember going to an anniversary screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and Richard O'Brien was there.
Mm.
And he was doing a Q&A, and somebody stood up and asked, "Hey, Richard O'Brien, just what was going through your mind? What made you conceive this bonkers musical that you invented?" And he just said, "It's called Marijuana."
Yeah.
But in that original brand, it's called marijuana. Always inhale your joints.
Anyway, moving on. The next two-parter is called The Pharaoh. And in this one, the Pharaoh is basically King Tut from Batman. He thinks he's a pharaoh. He's obsessed with it. He's not actually a pharaoh. He's just obsessed with it.
I think he's playing the part very well. He's played by an actor named Peter Mark Richman.
Who you might remember from Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. He was also one of the main guys in Naked Gun 2.5.
Yeah. He knows how to play it straight.
Mm-hmm.
He plays it straight very well. And then we have, like I alluded to earlier, this very particular comic version of Cleopatra that I've seen in many, many movies and cartoons, that Cleopatra is depicted as essentially a Jersey girl.
Yeah.
Like she's got a really thick Jersey accent or American accent is really suffused with a lot of colloquialisms. We saw the same character in Batman.
True.
We saw, and I've seen that in Peabody and Sherman. I've seen that in Carry On Cleo, in one of the Carry On movies.
I don't know why that's always the gag, but whatever.
I don't know why this was the stock character for Cleopatra at the time.
I feel like a lot of the time when there was a dynamic between villain and sidekick, and the sidekick was a woman and the villain was a man, the idea was that having a woman who is more down to earth is supposed to be some sort of comic juxtaposition so that the guy who is clearly like originally a normal guy who just has a weird fetish and she's just going along with it makes it seem kind of funny. I don't know. Anyway, Cleopatra is played by Jane Elliott, who is actually an incredibly like prolific soap opera actor. She was on General Hospital from 1978 to this year. Like, she took some years off in the middle there, but she's been on that show pretty consistently since the 70s, and she won a Daytime Emmy for it. So she's actually a pretty good cat. Anyway, they've stolen, like, a miniature old pyramid, and inside the pyramid, there's a being of pure energy that's going to kill us all.
What do you suppose this being of pure energy looks like?
Looks like someone in like a green blanket so they can toaster some stuff on it.
It's a guy wearing a blanket.
Yeah.
It's like the Creeping Terror, but like with a blue screen effect.
Like, I can't help but sort of be impressed. Anyway, the next episode
But as you've mentioned, if you're really high, that's probably got to be pretty terrifying.
The next episode is called The Spider Lady. And in this one, they fight the Spider Lady.
The Spider Lady is played by Tiffany Bowling, who I've met.
Oh, no shit. That's cool.
Briefly, Tiffany Bowling,
who was in the movie The Kingdom of the Spiders.
Well, she was also in a movie called The Candy Snatchers, yeah. Which I heard a lot about, and this is another time when I get to bring up our friend Mark Edward Hoyk. He was a huge, huge fan of The Candy Snatchers. I think he owned his own print of it, and he pushed really hard. It showed up at a few midnight screenings, and I believe Tiffany Bowling came in, and I got to sort of say hi to her at one point. Either it was Tiffany Bowling or somebody else. But
Candy Snatchers is a film about a bunch of criminals who kidnap a young woman, and she ends up...
Well, what happens is they kidnap a young heiress, and they hide her in a coffin underground with a tube so she can breathe. And they contact, I think it's her stepfather, and say, "Hey, we'd like some ransom now." And he's like, "Nope, I don't care about her. Yeah. Keep her." And they don't know what to do because they kidnapped this girl and they had no intention of keeping her.
Yeah. She was also in a really, really good gimmick horror movie we recently talked about in an episode we've got mail called Wicked Wicked, which is about a serial killer operating in this giant hotel and no one knows where he is. And the gimmick of the movie is that it's actually two movies playing simultaneously. And on one side of the screen, you're watching the regular plot. On the other side of the screen, you're watching ancillary stuff. Like when someone talks about where they've been, you'll see it on the right side of the screen. Or you'll see things from two different angles. So you'll see the victim walking around and you'll see the killer stalking them, but they don't know where they are. It works surprisingly well. It's actually a pretty cool film. So I just want to give a shout out to that. But yeah, the Spider Woman. Is it Spider Woman or Spider Lady?
The Spider Lady.
The Spider Lady wants to impersonate Electra Woman, and she does, and get away with a whole bunch of crimes, which she does not.
No. And she has two henchmen, not sidekicks, but two thugs, in Batman, and their names are Spinner and Legs.
Yeah, so that's more Batman-y than usual. And then she's
a spider, but she's a shapeshifter, so that's a real little odd.
And then the last two-parter, the Pharaoh and Cleopatra return for Return of the Pharaoh, in which case the Pharaoh steals another magic thingamadooty. But the twist here is that at the end of the cliffhanger, the Pharaoh's plan was to trap Electra Woman and Dinah Girl inside a pyramid where they would just die there. Problem is, they accidentally trap themselves in there too, and they have to team up with Electra Woman and Dinah Girl to find a way out. That's actually pretty clever, and at the very least,
especially for this show,
it breaks the formula. So I was watching this and oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Something different is happening. And I think they realized that Peter Mark Richman and Jane Elliott were really fun. And giving them an opportunity to not just be the mincing bad guys, but actually kind of work with the heroes made it a better episode.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know if that's the best episode of the show because they're frankly mostly the same episode. But I would say the Dinah Girl Turns Evil episode is the best, followed by Return of the Pharaoh.
Yeah.
I think it was probably the two.
But yeah, these things just sort of breeze by. They don't stick in the mind. They're really, really cheap. And it's just not good action.
No.
This is supposed to be sort of an action-adventure show, and it's not really grabbing you the imagination.
It's not action-packed. It's not funny.
No.
Even by kid show standards, they're not even trying to make jokes a lot of the time. And if you look at it in terms of sort of an aspirational, sort of heroic thing, they stand for truth and justice and stuff in a very generic way, but they don't have enough personality to be the kind of person you'd want to be other than the fact that they're superheroes. Yeah. I kind of wish we'd actually spent more time with them as reporters, because that's something you can actually do. You know? You can't just like kidnap a mad scientist and keep him in your basement and have him make stuff for you so you can beat up people in fetish outfits. But you can be a reporter and actually like make the world a better place, you know?
We hadn't reached that point of kids' entertainment yet where everything was just a toy commercial. Everything was super toyetic and they were trying to design shows to sell toys and sell outfits. But we're seeing the oversimplification of concepts like in Batman that would make that sort of era possible. Where the characters don't have to have personality because you're going to buy the toy and fill the personality for them.
Yeah.
Electro Woman and Dyna Girl, yeah, they weren't designed to be toys, but they easily could have been. They were a product more than anything. And it feels like a pretty cynical endeavor overall. They're not thinking things out. It's just, you know, just another attempt to fill space in a children's TV slot and sell them cereal ads.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they don't stick in the consciousness because of anything they did in the show in a positive way. I think the reason anybody knows about Electro Woman and Dyna Girl now is like for ironic reasons. It's like when they made that Banana Splits movie and just turned it into a horror movie, because who really cares about the Banana Splits anymore?
The only thing you can do with the Banana Splits really is do something subversive, because otherwise it just doesn't. There's no reason. No one's going to be like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yay. And, like, it's going to be like.
Electro Woman and Dyna Girl, even though we're living in through this age where superheroes are everywhere and we're kind of oversaturated, these particular superhero characters haven't gotten any kind of like real traction.
Yeah.
Not that they didn't try.
They kept bringing them back. And I think the energy of the actors, especially Dyna Girl, makes it pop a little. I think the song is good. The song is
the
lyrics.
Song is good.
The lyrics are kind of awkward, and like you're trying too hard to fit in all like the. You can tell when they have to turn into like Yoda cadence in order to get all the lyrics in order to get all like the plot elements in. But whatever, it's funky. It's cool. I like the theme song.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's just another one of those ultra repetitive. Like, I feel bad for kids in the 70s. Like, I'm not saying all the shows in the 70s were bad, but the ones that were bad were practically unwatchable. And there wasn't a lot of competition because you only had a couple of channels out there. So, I don't know. I guess people read more. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. Pong hadn't been really out there much yet. So, you better be reading. That's your only option. Or, God forbid, use your own imagination, but nobody wants that.
To go outside and just play?
It's like a baby's toy.
To read a book?
Electro Woman and Dyna Girl, has some name brand recognition.
Mm.
So, eventually, when superhero stories started to get more attention and started to make more money consistently, as opposed to the occasional Batman or the occasional Superman in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was an attempt to bring Electro Woman and Dyna Girl back in a television pilot for the WB. And this is not a full-length pilot. It's only a 15-minute pitch pilot. It is readily available online.
Mm.
It stars an actress named Ann Steadman as Dyna Girl. And it stars Marky Post as Electro Woman, and that's cool.
Good casting. And
if you don't know who Marky Post is, by the way, because I feel like she was in like she was big in a lot of shows in the 80s, people don't talk about a lot. She was in Night Court, which was a monster. Night Court was one of the biggest sitcoms of the 80s. People don't talk about it a lot anymore, but it was incredibly popular. She was also on a very long-running action show called The Fall Guy, which is actually a really cool idea, and I'm surprised it hasn't been rebooted again in a while, but it's about a stuntman who moonlights as a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Awesome idea for a show. Let's do that. The premise of the new Electro Woman and Dyna Girl, this pilot, which didn't get picked up, was a young girl is saved by Electro Woman when she's a child, and as a result, she has grown up idolizing Electro Woman. She is now a freshman in college, and she went to the college where Electro Woman went, and she's trying to track her down to have her come to an alumni event. Electro Woman does not respond, so she heads on over to the address on the letter that got returned unanswered, and she's living in a trailer park.
Mm.
Her career has gone to shit, and it's now up to this young girl who idolizes Electro Woman to get this woman who has completely given up on, is totally jaded on the process, up and running again as a superhero. It's raunchier than I thought it would be. Like, Electro Woman is like taking showers with all of her college buddies and like talking about things in her various places. Yeah,
like somebody waves a gun at her and says, oh, please, I've had things bigger than that up my, and then she's cut off.
Yeah.
Gross Elvira level entendres and no entendres, just raunchy humor.
Yeah.
This was made in 2001. This was like shortly after Mystery Men. This was when we were kind of trying to demystify superheroes.
It was also in the middle of raunchy comedy land when There's Something About Mary was recently a big hit, and we were like getting this kind of really just like
a lot of
farts.
Well, yeah, a lot of bodily humor, bodily fluid humor was really in vogue at the time. Margie Post sells it.
She's good.
I actually think it's really funny, and I like this premise that of sort of like the burned out superhero, that Electro Woman and Dyna Girl split up because Dyna Girl ran off with Electro Woman's husband.
Yeah.
And she lives in a trailer park and just is an alcoholic and a smoker.
On one hand, it seems kind of disrespectful to the original series to just like throw Dyna Girl under a bus like that and say that like Electra Woman not only like fell from grace, but was like just became just sort of like this weird, Al Bundy-ish slob.
Yeah.
Like, on one hand, it's a little disrespectful to that. I can maybe see why some people would have been turned off by it. But for what it is, it's a little lowbrow for my taste, but it does what it does rather well.
Well, and also, how much respect do Electra Woman and Dyna Girl really deserve? I mean, they're in the premise of the show, they are lower tier superheroes.
Yeah.
Nobody, like, in the original series, they're the only superheroes in the world. In this one, they're part of the DC universe. And indeed, we get cameos from The Flash and Aquaman.
Yeah, The Flash is, like, ordering a pizza and then just runs out. But there's a really cute bit with Aquaman where Aquaman is there at the alumni event.
Because a lot of superheroes went to this high school.
I guess, or college. But
or
like,
college, yeah.
And I guess the gag is weird. He's just like, I was in the cafeteria. They have halibut. and our hero, the girl who will be cool, eventually become the new Dyna Girl, is just like, I can get you a coupon for another restaurant? Thank you. Which is actually a funny bit.
It's a funny bit.
It's a genuinely funny bit.
And Aquaman is like he's like a fish creature. Like he's got gills and weird eyes and fishy ears. Looks like an Aquaman.
Yeah. I actually, like, again, and the whole thing is she decides to be Dyna Girl in order to get Electra Woman out there again. So they go to like a signing at a local hardware store
in order to get her back into the public eye. Yeah. It's like, let's do some like publicity events.
Yeah.
Because in order to be a superhero, you need publicity.
Yeah. And so there's it so happens that someone decides to rob the place that day and she has to save the day. And everyone's like, oh, Electra Woman is back. And Electra Woman realizes that she needs Dyna Girl, and so she decides this new girl's her new Dyna Girl, and she actually has, like, a big contract, like, yeah, this is gonna put you in a lot of danger, you should probably sign this contract. Appreciated that, thought that was a fun little bit. And the whole thing is she's now gonna, they're gonna live together, and Electra Woman's gonna go back to college and finish her degree. Which feels like putting a hat on a hat, but okay, like, whatever, let's do it.
Well, I mean, this is the premise. Where are we going to live? In the trailer? Or no, it's going to be the dorm room. We got to have to set up the setting.
Yeah.
All of this stuff is established in just a 15-minute short, by the way. It's not a full episode.
No.
It just lays everything out.
It doesn't feel too rushed, actually. I got to be honest. Tells a little 15-minute story. This is certainly worth tracking down on its own. Should it have gone to series? I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I think Marky Post is definitely selling it. Maybe I would have retooled it a little bit, scaled it back a smidge on the sort of the degrading sexual humor. I don't think Electra Woman really needs that. I think you can pull off the same thing without it being, you know, quite so degrading. But at the same time, they went for it. And kudos to Marky Post for being game. It's certainly worth checking out. If you think you've seen every superhero story. And then about 15 years went by, and they decided to do an Electra Woman and Dyna Girl. Now, this is essentially a miniseries that would then get re-edited into a movie. Mm. But I have to imagine that if it was successful, they would have wanted to do more.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a pilot. It's kind of a series. It's kind of not. But for the sake of being a completionist, we're going to talk about it anyway. That is the 2016... miniseries/movie of Electra Woman and Dyna Girl, starring a couple of really big YouTube celebrities.
Yeah, Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart.
Yeah.
Who were big YouTube celebrities in shows like My Drunk Kitchen.
She was so big when it first came out. She was huge. Hannah Hart was huge. Everyone I know was like really loving everything she did.
Podcasts like Not Too Deep and This Might Get Weird.
I wasn't super familiar with Grace Helbig before this, but she's actually really good in this. Grace Helbig plays Electrowoman. Hannah Hart plays Dinah Girl, and they are superheroes in Akron. And basically, they've accomplished nothing. They're hanging out in their superhero outfits. They call themselves superheroes, but they haven't really done anything.
Well, the premise of the show is there was a big event several years earlier where in the comic books, a big crossover event.
Yeah, like Onslaught or Crisis on Infinite Earths or something.
And in the world of this, that event was years ago, and they got rid of all of the supervillains.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of superheroes, but no villains.
There's a heroes, no villains, and essentially not enough crime to go around, which means a lot of superheroes have gone to pot.
And people have actual superpowers, so like they actually have like a reason to do this stuff. But what superhero culture has turned into is a modern form of celebrity culture, where you're a superhero, maybe you stop the occasional liquor store robbery, but mostly you're doing endorsement deals and interviews.
Yeah, you're just in it, which is a smart place to take it for the world of modern YouTube fame.
It is, actually. Yeah. And so the idea is Electrowoman and Dinah Girl are... the roommates, they're just hanging out together. They have a great rapport. Like, Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart are really genuinely funny together. And they're actually pretty good actors. I think Hannah Hart in particular brings a bit more to the character, but, like, they're both really good in this. They end up stopping a liquor store robbery, and they end up going a little overboard and accidentally ripping a guy's arm off, which was a bit more than I was expecting from this. That gets them some media attention, and they are invited to Los Angeles by a big superhero talent agency to try to maximize this big moment, and they decide to sign with them rather impetuously, and it turns into, for a while, a pretty conventional small-time group signs with the big city storyline, where one person starts really selling out, the other person thinks it's all about the music / superheroing.
And they even predict how predictable this plot is going to be. It's like, let's shake hands on this. It's not like we're going to be set on these two divergent paths where we're going to separate and then come back together for a climactic event.
Yeah.
And lo, that's the plot of the movie. Yeah, Electrowoman begins to really love the idea of becoming a celebrity because they've been destitute. They've been living in a really small apartment for this whole time.
And they've been working really hard to be superheroes for a while, so success feels good.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Hannah Hart, Dinah Girl, wants to be a good superhero, and she thinks that's more important than anything else. And while she's willing to do some of this publicity stuff, she doesn't want it to get in the way of doing superhero stuff. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of superhero stuff to do. They get a cool makeover. Their costumes are actually pretty cool. One of the things with the Electrowoman and Dinah Girl that always kind of sucked is their costumes always look stupid.
Yeah.
Especially considering they had like the letters for their names like on their clothes, like DG, EW, not great. EW, do you really want to be known as Ew?
Ew.
That's terrible.
Ew, terrible. Egg.
Yeah. Why would you... And there was this thing would be like, the scene transition, the original series with the letters EW would fly at the screen. And every time I went, ew, like, that's not the vibe you want. So they get a nice little makeover. Their costumes look practical and cool. I like this trend that we've had in the last few years where superhero costumes are being a bit more practical. Look like something people might actually be able to wear as opposed to just giant rubber armor. So I appreciate that. But the problem is, as they get more enmeshed into celebrity culture, and then a supervillain actually shows up for the first time in many, many years, and just immediately slaughters, like, the number one A-list superhero. And all the other superheroes are like, we were not ready for that.
It's the story of Mystery Men. It's really similar to Mystery Men, because Mystery Men, a big part of that universe was... superheroes get endorsement deals, and that's the way you become a bigger hero. And the joke of Mystery Men was, it's about the other guys, the guys that can't get the endorsement deals because they're not good, like, interesting superheroes.
Yeah.
Shufflers.
They're not
and bowlers.
Sexy. Yeah. They don't have skills that look cool on a Wheaties box. There's a great speech at the end of Mystery Men where they dedicate their victory to everyone who does a really hard job really well and nobody appreciates it. Like, the people who work at the DMV. That's a hard job! Zini Garofalo is just like, I just want to dedicate this to everyone who supports independent film.
It's like,
which was an ad lib.
She says, to all the people who listen to local music and support independent film, that got a cheer in my theater.
Yeah, that was an ad lib. They were like, only had like a couple of feet of film stock left, so they just let her run with it, and they kept it on the movie, and I'm glad they
good,
did.
Good, yeah.
But like, this does feel like it owes like some debt to Mystery Men. That's sort of like, we're taking the piss out of superhero culture, but we are very fond of it.
Yeah,
and I think that's the line. I think that's what keeps it from being cynical. I think it's actually a pretty good superhero story.
It's an okay superhero story. It's really kind of shabbily put together. It's not very well written.
Well, the story isn't amazing.
Some of the gags aren't that great. There was a bit near the end which I found really amusing, where I think it was Electro Woman had to get across town
in L.A. She's in the valley,
in Los Angeles, and she has to get across town in L.A. and like every Uber she tries to get into is the wrong one.
Yeah. How many black Priuses are there in this town?
She gets in and the guy gets really excited that Electro Woman is in his car. He's like, yes, you can be my driver. The driver. And he gets really into his role while he's giving her a ride.
Honestly, the whole bit about how, yes, I have kidnapped your sidekick and you must save her. And she finds out quickly she's in Beverly Hills, but she's in the valley, which in the middle of the day will take you at least an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't have a car and she can't fly or anything. So she's just got to get an Uber. And a big chunk of it is her waiting for her Uber. That is so sympathetic. You've ever had to wait for an Uber in LA. Oof. That whole bit's funny. I really dig this one. I genuinely like this. You call it shabby, but I think that's by design. It's supposed to be kind of conversational. This is a show starring YouTube personalities, and it treats superheroes like YouTube personalities. And what are YouTube personalities? It's personality first.
Yeah.
They might have a show where they do something, where they cook or they make soap or they play video games or whatever they do. Mm. But the real appeal is to sort of connect to that person and want to hang out with them, want to feel like you're part of their inner circle. And I feel like that's what we do with Electro Woman and Dyna Girl. We get to feel like we're hanging out with them, and I want to hang out with them. They're funny.
It's called a manufacturing authenticity. That's why people go to YouTube and YouTube personalities, because they ostensibly are more authentic than other entertainers.
Theoretically, yes.
It's just as much a machine, especially for bigger stars like Hannah Hart. But
at least later on.
Later, when they got really really big. I watch a show called Good Mythical Morning. If you've ever heard of that one,
I've heard about it.
These two guys, their names are Rhett and Link, Their shtick is kind of loose, kind of open. It's like there's a lot of food-based things where it's not just eating challenges, but like taste testing or guessing when a certain food was invented.
That's a key thing.
But what you're doing is you're watching this show because A, you get to see them doing it in particular because you like their personalities, and B, they have a good punchy setup for a show that's easy to consume.
But it's also like, again, what they're doing helps. Mm. I mean, like shows where people eat, you know, on the surface that might not seem like anything, but think about, there's a lot of people who live alone, don't have anyone to eat with. Eating is a social activity. It's what we're raised with. The idea that it's a social activity. So I know people who will watch that kind of show just to eat with.
Oh, there you go.
It serves a function, I feel. Yeah. And I think that's something that, I think this movie gets. I think it understands that on a surfacey level, it needs to have superhero shtick. But what it really is a story about YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's a story about YouTube celebrity. It'd be a good double feature with that underrated Gem in the Holograms movie.
Yeah.
Which is not an amazing movie, but it was way better than it got credit for. Like, that's a perfectly good slumber party movie about a YouTube band that makes it big and almost falls apart and learns to get back together, and there's some good songs in it. Mm. On that level, that movie is fine. If you wanted the motorcycle guitars, I'm sorry, they didn't get the budget for those. They actually tried. But that's not what they got.
And they set up a great sequel, which we won't get because you didn't see that movie.
Oh my god, we were going to have Kesha as Pizzazz. They showed her. Nobody saw it. We'll never get that. Damn it. So mad. But in any case, this is that kind of vibe. And it's actually there's surprisingly few movies and shows that I think are capturing what YouTube celebrity and personality is kind of about. Maybe they're trying to capture it in a plot direction, but to actually like, and I think, was it Grace Helbig?
Grace Helbig, yeah.
Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart, I think, are pretty natural in that regard. I just think they're pretty good actors. She's Helbig is fine. I think Hannah Hart just brings a bit more to it. I think her characters have got a bit more like conflict in her.
Yeah.
So that helps. But I buy them. I would like to see more of this Electra Woman and Dinah Girl. If they had renewed this for another season, miniseries movie, I would have been like, cool. I can't wait to see that. I'd like to hang out. I like to hang out more with these superheroes.
Oh, and another element. Hannah Hart is gay, and Dinah Girl is gay. They mentioned she has like a few little throwaway lines of dialogue and pronouns that denote her sexuality.
Yeah,
and it's not about romance at all.
It doesn't have
anything to do with the plot.
There isn't a scene where like there's a big revelation.
No, they acknowledge that she's queer and they just move on, and that's great. I like that.
Yeah, I dig it.
And it's not one of those. Well, I guess it is one of those things where you could kind of like snip and take it out, but. No, it's
they
there.
Don't need to. It's threaded throughout, though. To be weird. So, like, no, I agree. So we're gonna do all three of these, even though the third one arguably wasn't a cancel too soon commodity. Like, maybe it was only intended to be one thing. Mm. But of course, at the end of every one of these shows, we say, was it canceled too soon? Whitney Seibold, the original 1976 Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, was it canceled too soon?
No. Yeah. No, it was not. It's not that enjoyable. It's not crazy enough to be fun. Some of the cheap effects do have their charm. Mm-hmm. I think cheap bad special effects can be great.
Yeah, like Land of the Lost got away with this.
Yeah,
I actually have enjoyed as an adult going back and seeing some of the Land of the Lost because the stories were weird and they actually like had some fun with it. It wasn't quite as formulaic.
Yeah, there's not. It's so formulaic, and the main characters have no personality whatsoever. Yeah, it's just not kooky.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I like some of the personalities involved. I think what was her name? The Judy Strangis. I think Judy Strangis is definitely the breakout star of this. I think she's just got more energy. She's having more fun, and again, when she's the villain, that's a genuinely good episode. But yeah, it's that same Sid and Marty Krofft, Ruby Spears shtick. It's the same formula over and over again.
Yeah.
They bring nothing to it. It's not funny. It's not exciting. Mm. It's not clever. And I want to be kind because it's a kid's show. I want to be kind because the premise is perfectly fine, but it's not fun to watch. So what can I do with this? I can't say it was canceled too soon. I think they had a shot. I'm actually amazed that it had such an impact that we got more of it, but we did. So the Marky Post version, was it canceled too soon?
Yes. I actually would like to see that one, this sort of like raunchy comedic version of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl carried on, because I only got 15 minutes of it.
Yeah.
I think that was a good setup. I think Marky Post was really good. I liked the tone, and I like a good dirty joke. So yeah. I think there were enough fun, tasteless, dirty jokes that I actually chuckled numerous times.
I agree that Marky Post is great, and I actually also agree that the setup is really, really strong. And I like dirty jokes, too. We talked about the Elvira pilot on the show, and that's
nothing but dirty jokes.
And it's nonstop hilarity. It's arguably the funniest pilot we've ever reviewed.
For sure.
But this one, I feel like it was falling back on raunchiness as like sort of
like lazy.
It felt a little lazy about it. It was basically like, we're going to be raunchy and that'll just make it seem edgy and then we'll move on, because I actually feel like the character stuff was stronger than that.
Okay.
And I feel like if they found the right balance and if the raunchiness wasn't all about sort of talking about how, Electra Woman's gross. She's no woman and she's got a body. Like, occasionally some of them seem kind of mean-spirited like that.
A few.
You cut those out. You don't need those.
I feel like Marky Post was strong enough that she was able to, give back.
I think if the big note after that is you can keep the raunchy humor, just make sure that Marky Post isn't being treated like this weird, gross entity, and actually, keep, the tone a bit more positive. Like, have it be more sex-positive rather than sex-gross. Yeah. Then you can do all the raunchy jokes you want.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what it needs. So I'm going to say it was not canceled too soon, but it's on the edge and it needs a little retooling, but not much.
Again, this was like not even the full pilot. It was this 15 minute little thing.
Hence the note.
All
right. And then last but not least.
But my point is, you would have got it.
I would have got it, but I would have insisted on that they take a few notes. That's all. Okay. And then last but not least, the 2016 version, which is very readily available. You can see it for free on Tubi, with Hannah Hart and Grace Helbig. Again, here's treating the thing, it the way it is.
Yeah. As a web series, like it was edited to be like a film with a conclusion. So
yeah, it was meant to be both things. You could watch it serialized or would edit together perfectly well as a film. And so honestly, you watch the film and it doesn't feel like too serialized.
Yeah, I can think of this as, would I want like a sequel with those same characters?
Yeah.
I feel like it needs to be a little crazier. It was a little kind of laconic. It was a little too laid back. Mm. That there needs to be a little bit more energy for it to function as a film.
Yeah.
I watched it all in one chunk as a movie, so it's kind of hard for me to see what this would have looked like in little episodes. Mm. Maybe if I had seen it broken up, I would have seen how like each little vignette would have played out.
Mm-hmm.
As a film, yeah, it feels a little too slack, a little too casual.
Well, I think that is the point, though. I think it's supposed to be kind of a casual, I wouldn't call it a mumblecore, but you know, that kind of like really laid-back kind of comedy. Mm. And I think as those kinds of laid-back comedies go, sometimes those things fall back on feeling kind of off the cuff, and as a result, they feel unfocused. This one, I think the script's fine. I think the script's actually pretty funny. Again, it's laid-back, yeah. Mm. I think that's by design, so it didn't bug me. I think that if they did more of this, whether you do it as a web series or whether you do it as a movie, I think you need to incorporate like another Sid and Marty Krofft thing to try to like make it pop a little bit. Like if they had them go to the land of the lost, like that's their big story this time, or oh no, Lidsville is attacking or whatever. I don't know. the Sigma the Sea Monster is this giant seaweed creature who's attacking the city. Like, play with it a little bit more.
I think there is a Sigma of the Sea Monsters like horror movie being made. Like, I think it was one of those Blumhouse things where they bought the rights to Sigma of the Sea Monsters and I think they're going to turn Sigmund into like an actual sea monster.
Well, apparently, there was a reboot in 2017 starring David Arquette.
What?
A Sigmund. What the fuck is this? Apparently, yeah, Amazon released a reboot of Sigmund the Sea. What the shit?
No. Oh, no. Well, next week on Canceled.
we've
committed.
We already have plans, but I will be looking into this because that's weird. Yeah. Next time on Canceled Too Soon, we will be reviewing a film that we've gotten a lot of requests for over the years. In fact, this was actually submitted to us by one of our listeners a long time ago. Yeah. The Black Donnellys, which is a short-lived drama series about a family called the Donnellys, and they exist.
They're Irish.
It's Irish
organized crime.
Yeah, it's co-stars Olivia Wilde and a bunch of other people who you might recognize, but I think Olivia Wilde's probably the most famous person now. Kate Mulgrew's in it.
Okay, and it has one of my favorite phrases that I see on TV DVD box sets.
What's that?
Includes all 13 episodes, including 7 never aired. Like, it's a selling point. I can't remember what movie it was, but I swear I saw a straight-to-video movie that said, too good for the big screen.
That's way to own it. Like, you know? Yeah, fuck you guys. You done fucked up.
Theaters were afraid of us.
We're too edgy, man. Thank you everybody for listening to Cancel Too Soon. We're very, very grateful for every single one of you for listening. Please subscribe if you haven't already. If you want to contribute and can to the show even more so, you can head on over to patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork, where we have a lot of exclusive shows, including, as we said, a weekly show dedicated to the 1960s Batman television series. We're doing one show per two-part episode. We have a show dedicated to every single episode of Star Trek, All Our Yesterdays. We have shows dedicated to the Academy Awards. We just recently dropped another one of there where we're talking about the Oscar-nominated films of 1941. Mm-hmm. We're reviewing every single Best Picture nominee in order. We have commentary tracks. Later this month, we're going to be doing, as voted by our patrons, a commentary track for Batman and Robin, the George Clooney, Chris O'Donnell fiasco. Mm. We have a show called Not on Disney Plus, where we talk about stuff that should be on Disney Plus that Disney has access to that they're just not giving us for some reason. And a bunch of other things besides. And you can vote for future episodes just like this one, which was a Patreon poll. We're gonna have another Patreon poll coming up for Cancel Too Soon very soon. And, of course, you are, of course, more than welcome to follow us on Twitter. We are at Critic Acclaim. I am at William Bibbiani.
I am at Whitney Seibold.
Together, we are at Critic Acclaim. We have an email address. letters@criticallyacclaimed.net is that email address. We would love to hear from you. We might read your email in an upcoming episode of We've Got Mail. So feel free to write us about something we talked about in this episode or any other questions you have about what we do, film, TV, history, whatever you want, really. We're open books. People write us about important things. People write us about silly things. And we love them all. So thank you, everybody. Once again, thank you, everybody, especially to our patrons, without whom the show wouldn't exist. If you like soap, you like soap.
Who doesn't like soap?
Everyone likes soap. It's soap. We have a soap store. Me and my partner, M. Lopez da Silva, we have a soap store called Salt Cat Soap over on Etsy. Salt Cat Soap is all one word. That's how you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. And we design homemade, art, very, very, very fancy soaps for you to enjoy. And you can purchase them over on Etsy. Look for Salt Cat Soap or follow us on any of those social medias. We just dropped a few really, really cool designs. Be sure to check out if there's any of left available. We only made a very limited run initially. M. Lopez da Silva's Pride bars, which are giant-sized rainbow flowers, just absolutely gorgeous, and they smell amazing. I love them so much. They smell fantastic, so please check those out. And, yeah, I guess that's it for us. So, once again, thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will see you next season.